Another edition of the Shooting USA Podcast special from the 2013 IDPA Indoor Nationals at Smith & Wesson. This time I'm welcoming Joyce Wilson and Paul Earhart. And that's when you guys are supposed to talk.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I was just waiting for Joyce to speak up. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you guys on here. We want to talk about how IDPA continues to develop. Joyce, you've got a big effort going that's continuing, the Tiger Team effort. Let's talk about that to get started.
Oh, the Tiger Team effort has been just remarkable for IDPA. When we first looked at doing a new rule book, obviously it was a daunting task because, number one, I'm not every place all the time, so I don't know what's going on in the East Coast versus the Midwest versus the West Coast. With the Tiger Teams, we've been able to pull people of all different skill levels, geographically diverse from all over the country, and get a whole bunch of information and also utilize a lot of special talents that we wouldn't have had access to. Pull that all together, have different people look at different sections of the rule book, and therefore I think we're going to end up with a product that's so much better than what any one or two people could have ever developed.
Well, that's the thing that I like about the idea of creating the Tiger Team, and that is recognizing that there are a lot of people enjoying this, but there are also a lot of people with different takes on it and different ideas about how it could be better. And this is a way to really give everyone a voice at every level.
Exactly. And while we haven't released any names of anybody on the Tiger Teams at this point by design, because we don't want them getting, you know, I don't know what the word is, but
maybe bombarded or
bombarded, right, exactly, right, with people going, well, make sure this rule gets in, make sure that rule gets in. You know, we want them to just be able to concentrate on what they're doing, concentrate on where we know the sport needs to go, and get their stuff done. And the Tiger Teams are real short-lived mm-hmm. by design. Mm-hmm. You know, we're only asking for about 90 days worth of work from each team. Mm-hmm. So if we start letting them get a whole bunch of other, you know, bombardment from outside, that could stretch and stretch and stretch. And people don't have that kind of time, and we can't ask that of a volunteer organization. But on the other side, it's been really neat to see how many people want to be involved. Mm-hmm. And I think it really brings IDPA back to exactly where it started as a grassroots effort. Mm-hmm. And we're allowing the members to have lots of input into where the sport's going to go.
It's a very popular shooting sport, as we know. You know, we continue to see a rise in membership. And this is just one of, I think, the facets that contribute to that popularity.
Exactly. I mean, between, you know, the use of the Tiger Teams and members actually feeling like they have a say-so in the sport now, to everything that's going on in the world and all the new first-time gun buyers, mm-hmm. you know, we're seeing tremendous growth that, who knows where the sport will end up in 5 years.
I think another interesting facet of the popularity of this sport and the continued growth is the way that IDPA utilizes the social media. And, Paul, that's your department.
Yeah, Joyce and I talked about this a while ago. And any kind of organization, membership organization, feeds off of hearing what people do. I mean, you see this on your end with viewers mm-hmm. of the show.
Very much so.
And same is true here. So while there are only approximately 330 shooters here at this match, there are 21,682 current members of IDPA. And so you got 21,352 that are really interested in what's going on here. They want to see the stages and stuff. So what we've been trying to do is, you know, under Joyce's direction, is you know, let people inside the match as much as possible. So photos, like you posted a photo of Jim Scouten tearing it up the other
right.
day.
Wildly popular, by
yeah.
the way.
Yeah. Awesome.
We put up the stages. The stages here are very interesting for people. So we let match directors around the country and clubs around the country see what the shooters here are up against. And we seeing feedback from them that, you know, they're stealing ideas off of the stage designs incorporated here. And we've seen that at other matches. And I think mm-hmm. that's something that we'll incorporate further, you know, going forward with, you know, other major matches around the country to see what creative ideas are coming up. And, you know, we're trying to use Twitter and Pinterest and mm-hmm. Instagram and, you know, but in the middle of that, Joyce has me writing and, you know, flogging me and trying to get me to load her magazines and stuff. I'm not quite sure how that's social media, but apparently I got to load magazines for her.
Hey, it's part of the gig.
Exactly. And I have to say that I am extraordinarily pleased with everything that Paul has done. I mean, our social media presence has gone from what social media to, wow, IDP is everywhere.
Well, that's the key reason that I want to bring this up, is that in this day and age, IDPA seems to be the only shooting organization that's really putting an effort into it, having great success at it, but I wonder why any of the others aren't doing it.
Because I got Paul Earhart.
Well,
give me way too much credit, but I think it's the, you know, the credit goes around. You and I were talking about this the other day, is, you know, that certain someone out in the cold, you know, mountain areas of Montana, Miss Julie Goloski-Golub,
right,
a good friend of yours and mine,
certainly,
and Joyce's, you know, she's always feeding me information and recommendations. And some of the stuff we're posting here for this match are things that, you know, Julie has promoted. So I'm stealing ideas from them. You know, I'll steal ideas I see from stuff you're doing and everything. You know, the clip that was posted online of
From Lee Wills.
Mm-hmm. From the show from Nationals. I mean, we want our membership to be able to share in what's going on, and you guys are routinely covering IDPA, and it's a great thing to share with the members, and it's just been fantastic.
Well, it's a real-time opportunity for not only people like you mentioned who aren't able to come to the match, the 20,000 plus who aren't able to be here, it's them being able to be attached to it in real time, ahead of seeing it on television, ahead of seeing it on DVD from the Panteo people. And that, I think, to an extent, is why I want to be here with the podcast talking about different things, because in the time it takes for us to sit down and have this conversation, those people can listen in and they can get a greater insight on what we've been doing here. Just it's an interesting time for media. You know, I mean, our key element is the television show, but all of these things that we continue to add to it bolster the viewership for the television show. And I think the same plays true for the shooting organization. The key element of the shooting organization is this match.
Correct.
And all of these other things bolster the popularity of this match.
Yeah. I would say, and this is true for Joyce and myself and others, Joyce is down in Texas. Mm-hmm. I'm up here in New Hampshire. You know, 90% of our kind of interaction is probably taking place on Facebook, because mm-hmm. We don't talk every day or every week, or she rarely wants to talk to me most of the time. But the you know, we're communicating through Facebook, and one thing I want to point out is, you know, we got Yamil Sued here taking pictures. You know, mm-hmm. took a bunch of your
master
squad.
Of his craft.
Absolutely.
Exactly. Now we post those pictures up of shooters and tag them, and all of a sudden your friends from your page, mm-hmm. you know, they're seeing you in competition, they see Jim in competition, and you got family members and buddies back home, and I'm, you know, I have friends here from other matches here in New England, and I know that I constantly keep in touch with online, and that's making the community of IDPA smaller and bringing everybody closer together, and we've got people from 20-some states here, 26, I think, something mm-hmm. like that.
Well, it's nice to have a venue that you can bring people from literally all over the world together.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, is one of the beauties of IDPA is, you know, that we can create this whole social media of our own to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
And
we talked about this quite a bit, is the international shooters. They can't all be here for this match, or like about 20 or so. But we communicate with the guys down in Costa Rica when they have their match. The guys from Puerto Rico will be in tomorrow, I think, to compete, and they're having their national championship in a couple weeks. And the social media allows us to help promote their match, make mm-hmm. sure the U.S. shooters who are interested in traveling down there know about it. Joanna and forgive me, I'm not even going to try to pronounce her last name. She's a U.S. citizen, but from Poland.
Mm-hmm.
And so we always try to connect up with the folks at IDPA Poland, let them know, see Joanna. And so they are connected to IDPA through social media, even though there's a language barrier, but they can do it with the photos and information that we post. And that, you know, keeps them as part of the community and not outsiders from the U.S. You know, they're part of it.
And bringing it back to the U.S. for just a minute, you know, with all the state of flux of the economy and the
right.
and the political climate, et cetera, it's nice to bring the firearms industry kind of back together mm-hmm. and provide kind of a solid front and also expose new shooters and people who may not have had an interest in firearms to something that they can look at and go, wow, number one, it looks really fun. Number two, it is some pretty good sound principles, not training per se, but right. very close to training.
It's practice.
It's practice.
Yeah.
You know, it can make me a better gun handler. It can give me skills. Hopefully I never have to use those, but they're in my toolbox.
Sure. And that was something that we touched on in the interview we did for the television show, is that in this down economy, we're still managing to sell out this match.
Exactly.
In an environment where it's difficult to get ammunition.
Exactly. And I'm still in awe that not only this match, but many of the matches that are coming up in the future are selling out club matches. We're hearing of club matches that have 80 to 100 people every week, every couple of weeks, still going out, still mm-hmm. blowing 50 to 100 rounds or whatever mm-hmm. each time.
Well, I think to an extent that's maybe part of the attraction to this particular match is that it's not a heavy, heavy round count. You get to do plenty of shooting. You get to do plenty of moving. And there are very detailed tests of all of the skills necessary to be successful in shooting and in IDPA. But you don't have to do it. You know, it doesn't require 450 or 500 rounds.
Exactly.
And that's something that is common in other nationals, in other pistol disciplines.
Exactly.
I think that is part of the appeal here.
Yes. And one of the things that we actually found out the hard way a couple of years ago when we had the world championship, you know, we tried to provide a higher round count, more stages, more shooting for the people that were coming into the inaugural world championship big match. What we found out was we took so much time with the shooting that we lost the social interaction time. Mm-hmm. And IDPA is a social sport. Mm-hmm. People come not just to shoot the match, but to see the people that they haven't seen since the last big match, which maybe in some people's case was a year ago. Mm-hmm. And they want that. They need that. So I firmly believe that the social interaction in the sport, the personal social interaction, is just as important as how many times you pull the trigger.
I would agree. And I think that brings us around back to the point that this is the most popular sport with regard to social media and how it's
right.
being seen and portrayed on the internet.
Right.
Yeah. What's interesting is the growth of IDPA is just tremendous. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about this earlier with Paul Plus. Last year, IDPA grew 12%. In the last 3 years, it's just under 40%.
Wow.
Yeah, it's huge. And, you know, every month it seems like it's a new high in terms of new registrations or whatever over the previous month, you know, same month a year ago. And that demand for involvement, you know, is a drive for communication. And the magazine, you can't reach people with a magazine yeah. constantly, and there's that lag time. But I take a picture of you right now, post it on Facebook in 5 minutes, boom, mm-hmm. you know.
And so, it spreads, and
yeah,
it's shared.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exactly. And people got a sense that they were there. They get to comment on it. You know, you may comment back on stuff. I'm sure you've commented. You're very active with your listeners and viewers, mm-hmm. you know, communicating back to them. And that just makes it a much more, you know, I hate the term family, but it very much is like that in a lot of ways.
Well, and you know, along with the Tiger teams and the rule book, I'm going to throw another little tag in for IDPA. One of the other things that I think is real big that's coming up in the next couple of weeks is a new website.
Okay.
We partnered with RangeLog for the development of the website. And we're going to preview a little bit of it at the awards banquet here.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say it's dynamite.
That's fantastic.
And I think people are really going to be excited because we've also incorporated some interesting social media type stuff in the new website.
Okay. So you're scooping me right now because I had no idea that this was going on.
Exactly.
But that's fantastic, and that's what we're looking for. Great news.
I think people will be very, very pleased.
Yeah. Interesting. Really fun stuff. This match specifically, like you and I have talked about, is a very technical and very demanding match, and I think a real test of all of the skills required to be successful, not only in IDPA, but also in the world of concealed carry and in you know, God forbid, the world of defending yourself in an armed attack.
Absolutely. I mean, they were very creative in their stage designs. They were very creative in their use of props. Mm-hmm. There's stationary shooting, shooting on the move, lots of different targets, shooting in low light, shooting when in no light with flashlights, swingers, movers, up and downs, turners, poppers, you name it. They've used all of it. Mm-hmm. And yet, you know, something that you touched upon earlier in a very effective manner is to not burn just a lot of ammo for the sake of burning a lot of ammo.
Right.
So, yeah, it's a very technically difficult match. But, interestingly enough, the shots aren't that hard if you just watch that little thing on the front of the gun called the front sight.
Right.
It's not something that can't be completed by a marksman-level shooter, but it's something that can be very challenging for a master class shooter because there are multiple ways that you can approach the scenario. Mm-hmm.
Something that was interesting to me was, as you know, my first time to the IDPA National that was held outdoor. It was held at
right.
Frank Glover's ranges. And I marveled at how much creativity the match director and stage designers had when they took the sport outdoor.
Right.
And to an extent, I fell into the trap of saying, well, those indoor matches are nice, but it's just a lot of real elaborate decoration. Well, in this case, this year, it's not elaborate decoration. It's really maximizing the challenges.
Yes, it is. But there's some kind of cool elaborate decorations here, too.
Well, that too. Yeah.
How in the world did they get the ambulance in through a regular door?
Yeah, I studied that thing extensively, and they didn't want to be too forthcoming with the information, but they did some handiwork there.
Yes, they did.
Yes,
there's a sawzall involved.
Yeah, there's a few metal cutting blades, sawzall. Yeah, that's probably one of my favorite stages here.
Yes,
yeah,
absolutely.
I'm looking forward to watching the top shooters, you know, the distinguished masters and
yes.
the masters attack that course of fire, and
yes.
you know, see if I can even come close to 50% of their performance.
Yes,
that's going to be neat
yeah.
to watch.
Good luck
it's
with
fun.
That.
Yeah, right.
not as a commentary on your skill, but oh my God, you know, the top guys here are, you know, Glenn Shelby and CDP.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Jerry Micklin. You know, just, you know, a god with a revolver.
Right.
Vogel.
Well,
it's just unbelievable how quickly they can go.
Exactly. And how Vogel finds 15 to 20 seconds over everybody else at every match is just amazing.
Well, and then add to that his level of accuracy.
Oh, I mean, unreal. Yeah. Off the
just
charts.
Just commanding.
Off the charts.
Yeah. It's always fun to participate and get an idea of the challenges and where there might be some time that could be made up by these guys who are setting the pace on the cutting edge, and then to see if it can happen and see if they'll do it.
Yes.
That in essence, is really why I like to come and participate in this match.
Exactly.
Yeah, it makes it fun.
What was you shot through on Wednesday. What was your favorite stage?
It's a toss up at this point for me between the boat dock stage mm-hmm. one, and the ambulance stage. And it followed closely with a mention for Road Rage with the windshield and all the shots
yes,
from inside
absolutely.
The cab of the truck. Fantastic stuff. Really, really neat stuff.
What was your worst stage? What stage was disaster?
The absolute disaster occurred here on the wedding stage, shotgun wedding, and that's again within the rules, using the rules of IDPA to test all of the skills involved. On the face of it, you look at that stage, and it's not that challenging. You don't think, this isn't all that challenging. But when you take into account the fact that it's one scored shot on each of those targets, now the emphasis and the priority is on accuracy, and
correct.
Any slip in accuracy there is absolute disaster.
Correct.
So, you know, anything outside of the down one there with one shot on the target is a failure to neutralize.
Right.
And that's 5 seconds straight to your time.
Right.
That is absolutely brutal. So, I took...
That must be firm experience.
I'm holding, at this point, a tie for the worst performance on that stage with 4 FTNs. Two
wow.
of them I'll own, being that there were no hits anywhere on any of the paper.
And right.
Two of them are those ones you really, really want back because they're right there on the edge of the hardcover.
Right.
They're within a couple of millimeters of being okay and,
right.
you know, survivable. But
right.
you know, we shot in on our squad was Chad Barber from the Coast Guard Academy, and he's the guy who designed the stage.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he says to us as we're going up, he's like, you know, pay attention here. This is this one's important, and you know, you're looking at it like if you look at this like an IPSC shooter, you're going to be in big trouble, Jack.
Right.
And he was right, and he was right.
I'm glad you mentioned the Coast Guard because I think that's one of the really fascinating things about this match is unique to this match, and I think it's a thing that comes from Smith & Wesson, is that, you know, like 5 years ago they had the Coast Guard involved, and they have been designing the stage and running the stage with cadets here on the main public area, which arguably, I guess, is, you know, you would say is the best premier stage physically, dimensionally, and lighting and everything. And they always do a spectacular job. But over that time period, you know, the last 5 years, you're interacting with the Coast Guard cadets and Chad Barber, who's their coach of their combat arms team. And it's just a really nice to see Smith & Wesson bring them in, which is not a traditional group that you think of other IDPA clubs.
Right.
You don't think of what is essentially college coming in. And today you have the Gun Cats, the UVM shooting sports team here, and they're not shooting the match, and they didn't design a stage, but they're here volunteering and working stages. And that goes back again to Smith & Wesson reaching out to Vermont's college team and inviting them in, which I think is really unique, and it puts an emphasis on bringing, you know, younger shooters in and younger people. And I think it's refreshing for a lot of the shooters.
Yes.
I know, well, you know, Terry and Kitty are just over to Moon to be working with the UVM kids. And I think it's a you know, a really nice commentary about the approach Smith & Wesson takes towards the shooting sports.
Another thing I like about it is in both of those cases, this gives them an opportunity to help raise funds and awareness for their programs, which are otherwise rather unusual.
Yeah. Exactly.
There aren't many shooting clubs in colleges. There just aren't.
Right.
So. Yeah, the UVM kids had, their coach had their his place broken into or shed broken into in 10,000 rounds of, you know, spare brass or spent brass was stolen.
Wow.
And, you know, their ammo's gold at this point.
Yeah.
And so they're trying to figure out how to replace that so they can ammo up for their shooting season. And they've been getting, they've already raised about $600 selling a calendar and getting donations. There are guys who've been donating buckets of ammo and more, or spent ammo, you know, brass. And they're going to get more of that. And people, you know, the IDPA members are like, it's just kind of like, what do you need? What happened?
Right.
Oh, I'll send you some.
And that's fantastic. I mean, and again, to the family aspect of it and how everybody's unified and going to pull together in this day and age. If you're into shooting, whatever it is.
Exactly.
You know, we're here to help. We want to help each other out. You know?
Exactly.
That's fantastic stuff. Well, guys, I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation.
Oh.
We ate up 23 minutes almost, just like that.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, that's only about half or a third of the phone call length that when I talk to Joyce.
Right. That's why I don't call her very often.
That's
well, let me just say, too, John, thank you, guys, for your participation in the sport and for your support of the sport, because obviously that is immensely important to us, and we just can't thank you enough.
Well, I appreciate it very much. But as you know, if we weren't here covering this, it'd be a bunch of dead air because people don't just want to see us sitting around.
But the show covering the Nationals was fantastic. The piece he did on Lee was
unreal.
Great.
Thoroughly enjoyed that. And everyone who has sent me compliments on the Lee story, I've had to deflect. I mean, I'm thankful to have it, and I appreciate it. But all of the credit there goes to Lee, his brother, and his mom, because all I did was just let them tell me their story on camera.
Right.
And
between that and Trevor.
Yeah.
I mean, bringing Trevor into the sport, bringing Trevor into the shooting sports. And, you know, we can't thank you enough for that as well, because it's opened our eyes to some things that we can do, you know, to help wounded veterans, to help handicapped people in general.
To make
all
the matches more accessible.
Right.
So important.
And this one in particular really lends itself to
yes,
that.
Yes, it does.
You know, and there are a number of reasons that we need to make matches of all descriptions accessible to adaptive athletes. And not the least of which is that in a real-world scenario, a guy in a wheelchair might be a target for somebody.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
You know, for some thug or some mug
absolutely.
Or whatever.
So good luck rolling up on Trevor.
Yeah,
man.
Best of luck to you on that.
Yeah.
You know, we had talked about this earlier, that he chose to shoot this match with the gun he actually carries for personal protection. He shot this match with an M&P shield.
I saw that.
He's in SSP, and but he added, I think, to the challenges that he faces by choosing that particular gun. In the podcast that he and I did yesterday, he said, well, why wouldn't I do that? You know,
right.
It's the gun I'm going to roll around with all the time. I'm going to use it here, and I'm going to continue to hone my skill with it.
And exactly that. He's going to continue to hone his skill. He's going to continue to get better. And, again, don't come up on him unexpected.
No, bad move. Bad move, partner. Well, that's fantastic stuff. It's Friday. It's coming close to 5 o'clock here on the East Coast. So
awesome.
Might be time to see about happy hour. But we got another podcast planned for tomorrow. And stay tuned. 25 minutes with the president of IDPA and the head of their marketing department. Is it marketing or PR? Or?
Not even that. I work under Robert. He's in charge of marketing and membership.
Okay.
I carry Joyce's range bag at matches is what it comes
exactly.
down to.
So
don't glorify it. Trust me.
Self-deprecation. Absolutely to the last minute. I'm trying to let you get some credit in this thing. You're the man putting it out there on the
That's
internet
right.
anyway.
Thank and you. We appreciate his efforts,
Thank
too.
You.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.